Will you be around to enjoy your pension?
Social Security, insurance, and retirement plans may provide for your future financial security, but how about your health security?
The rapid decline in physical fitness which occurs after 30 years of age has enormous social implications.
This is the story of Science and People, a story told by two men, Lou Audrieth, who conducts this weekly conversation, and his guest for today, Dr. Thomas K. Cureton, Jr., Professor of Physical Education for Men at the University of Illinois. Today's topic, physical fitness, a number one health problem. Now, Lou Audrieth.
Dr. Cureton, I know that you've done a considerable amount of work on this whole problem of evaluation of those factors which have to do with physical fitness. We recognize, of course, that physical fitness is a number one health problem. It involves the individual as well as the nation and, in fact, all groups of society. Can you tell me exactly what you mean by the word physical fitness and what factors are involved in actually, let's say, evaluating this particular trait in human nature?
Physical fitness is a combination of many traits or qualities, some of which are deeply ingrained in the makeup of the individuals due to inheritance. But other qualities are definite developmental and are susceptible to training or conditioning. If I could group these, I might say that physique is one usual approach. That is, we may look at a person and note his muscular development, his posture, whether he has a healthy, robust appearance, and we may even feel the tone or condition of the tissues. We may proceed to test the strength and certain of the qualities in these tissues. We may note the somatotype as we speak of it. It means the body type that the person has from a constitutional body type basis. We're interested in the organic condition of the individual, how his heart rate behaves under certain definite testable situations.
Well, now, Dr. Cureton, you say something about his organic conditions. Is that different from, let's say, the appraisal of physique that you've just spoken about? In other words, his organic capacity in connection with the whole problem of physical fitness, that's an altogether different way of evaluating physical fitness, is it not, sir?
The functioning of the circulatory system and the respiratory system and the muscular system, the neuromuscular system, the way all those systems perform in a given activity is of great interest to us. There must be enough blood to perform any particular physical activity. Otherwise, the endurance in the activity will be very poor. As a matter of fact, the performance may be very poor, even in some relatively short activities. If these organic the organic capacities do not are not present in adequate amount for the performances attempted.
Well, now, Dr. Cureton, there must be some definite way in which you measure this or appraise this organic capacity as a factor involved in physical fitness. What are some of the tests that you actually carry out here in the laboratory?
We have a variety of tests which aim to tell us what the organic systems will do under definite standardized levels of work. For instance, we have a treadmill test, and during the walk of that walk or jog or run on that treadmill, we are able to take data from any human being to show how the pulse rate behaves, how the blood pressure behaves, how much oxygen is required to perform any particular activity, and we can evaluate what we call internal organic efficiency in terms of the expiratory gases. Technically, we speak of the RQ, the respiratory quotient. We can determine the energy cost of any activity by measuring it in terms of oxygen and converting that into calories.
Well, now, Dr. Cureton, you've done a lot of work here with athletes, not only at the University of Illinois, but over a period of years, I've also studied the superior performance of those men who have gone to the Olympic competitions. Is there something unusual about the heart and circulatory systems of these top athletes that would permit us to perhaps say that these individuals, if it were recognized that they possess such outstanding capabilities, would become superior athletes?
Individuals are very, very different. We find in studying successful swimmers that they have certain characteristics. They're flexible. They have, they float in a horizontal position. They usually have very good buoyancy, and they have organic capacity to continuously exercise the body in the water.
You mean by that, Dr. Curitan, now that you could actually, by looking at an individual, let's say at age of 10 or 12 or perhaps at 14 or 16, that you could tell from these particular characteristics that such an individual would actually become an outstanding swimmer? In other words, there's some way of perhaps predicting or guiding, let's say, an individual so that he will become an outstanding performer in some one particular sport.
We believe that these traits or qualities which make for success can be detected quite early in almost any youngster, boy or girl. We believe that these traits or qualities can be measured and that they have definite implications for, well, let us say the endurance type. If an individual is an endurance type, we think that we can recognize it quite early. At least by the junior high school level. If the sprint type is to be considered, we think that the basic reaction times of the individual and the speed with which the limbs or segments can be moved are of great importance.
By the way, Dr. Curitan, is that what you call the explosive type of athlete? I mean, the sprint type athlete? I notice you use that term in some of your publications.
We use a power capacity term, which applies to a combination of speed and force. And there are definite power capacity types of people. On the other hand, there are people who are low power capacity types. They might succeed in endurance events. They might be able to balance. And as a matter of fact, they could learn any particular skill. But whether they could perform it with a combination of speed and force, as in the explosive activities, might be quite another matter. We believe that power capacity can be measured and that we have the tests which are moderately good for that purpose.
Now, there's another factor under organic capacity as a part of physical fitness that is rather interesting to many of us. You mentioned that the nervous system is very important in any sort of daily functioning, whether it's in the case of athletic competition or whether it's just doing your ordinary job. Just what features are measured in the case of determination of organic capacity insofar as the nervous system is concerned, Dr. Curitan?
Well, in high-powered athletics, it's important to measure the willpower of the individual, and there are certain ways that that can be done. It is also important to measure the certain nervous characteristics such as speed. In some events, the speed characteristics are very important, and there are several kinds of reaction time tests that we measure. In certain kinds of recreational sports, vision might be very important. And, of course, the efficiency of the vision could be tested. But in the basic cardiovascular measures, we note changes which are due to fatigue. And in the basal metabolism test, we have a very sensitive test which shows the influence of nervous strain. For instance, football players on the morning of a contest will have a very high metabolic rate, whereas if you test them on a day when they're not playing a game and they do not have this this nervous anticipation of the game, their basal metabolic rates will be very much lower. We believe that the nervous tension in an individual can be reflected through measurements of the metabolic type, through the cardiovascular type, or through the direct measurement of action currents, which is a more complicated procedure but could be done for a few individuals.
Well, now, this question of organic capacity, of course, has been satisfactorily answered for our listeners, I'm sure, with respect to appraisal of the sense organs and the heart and circulatory system and affects muscular system and nervous system. But there's one factor that you have made a great point of in all of your work, and that is this so-called motor fitness. In one of your statements, for instance, you say that the final criterion through which all other elements of physical fitness are seen and measured in man is How is through his motor fitness, how continuously and efficiently he performs his daily work in industry or on the farm or in the armed forces or in whatever he may be doing. Now, what are some of the factors that are involved in this factor that you call motor fitness, Dr. Curitan?
Balance, flexibility, agility, strength, power, and endurance are the basic terms which describe different ways in which we can measure the motor performance of individuals. In certain activities, like track and field, agility becomes a dominant trait. In certain other activities, like football, it might be strength and a combination of power capacity, a combination of strength and power. We have different tests for balance, for flexibility, for agility, for strength, for power, for endurance. And by giving these tests and rating the individuals on definite rating scales, we can show the types of characteristics which are borne out in those individuals under standardized testing conditions. We believe that these basic traits combine themselves in certain proportions according to the kind of activity. We have analyzed a fairly large number of activities with respect to these basic traits. And we believe that we could say approximately how much involvement is present in these basic traits for almost any sport.
Well, now, Dr. Curitan, isn't it true that just these traits, let's say, are such as strength and speed, skill and endurance, aren't the only factors involved in this concept of motor fitness as a feature of physical fitness?
No, motor fitness is related to the organic efficiency very intimately. It is also related to physique. For instance, the best high jumpers will have long forelegs compared to the length of their upper legs. They'll have long legs compared to total body length. They'll have this basic anthropometrical portion, body type proportion, which has long been spoken of in anthropology. We call it the Curl Index, but simply it's long forelegs compared to upper legs and long legs compared to the height of the trunk. Now, if we were to measure Olympic champions who are successful in jumping, we'd find out that they have this proportion more than ordinary people. If we took the people who were the poorest in jumping, we would find out that they have the lowest Curl Indexes. In other words, they have short forelegs compared to the rest of their body lengths. And we wouldn't think of a Dachshund jumping very high, but we'd think of a greyhound jumping very high. The differences between people are just as great as differences between greyhounds, hippopotamuses, apes, or Dachshunds. The body types are almost as different in human beings.
Well, of course, we've been talking about athletes all this time, Dr. Curitan. Is there any hope that those of us who do not happen to have athletic prowess may also do something to increase our usefulness as human beings through a program of definite physical training? In other words, become more physically fit for the job that we have to do as citizens of our communities and of the state and of the nation.
We think that the examination of individuals in physical fitness will sensitize individuals to their capacities and to their needs. We believe it is possible to improve certain aspects of physical fitness very definitely, and mainly through a physical activity program, or what is called a physical conditioning program. We have a wide variety of activities in physical education which can be used for particular purposes. And well-trained physical educators are prepared to advise people as to how they can use these activities to improve the physical fitness. We think that much of the early degeneration which occurs after 35 years of age can be prevented by having people well-educated to the ways in which they can use the human body in interesting and healthful recreational activities. It is not just a matter of winning a championship. It is a matter of consistently conditioning the human body.
Thank you very much for a very interesting discussion, Dr. Curitan, of physical fitness as it affects every one of us. I'm sure that we can all profit very greatly by the advice which you have just given. We should all take more interest in our bodily well-being.
Today's story of the physical fitness program being carried on at the University of Illinois is just one of the many phases of scientific research and study
being done at your state university. Each week at this time, Lou Audrieth will have as his guest someone connected with some phase of this research to bring you another story of science and people. This is the University of Illinois Radio Service.